training manuals for sex. A bunch of us were hanging out watching a movie when we decided to play a game of truth or dare, writes Stephanie from Alameda, California. I whispered to my friend to dare me to kiss the boy I'm hot for. She said we had to pass candy back and forth to each other with our tongues. It worked out well, and I was completely happy. That is, until I hiccuped and choked on the candy. I eventually coughed it up. But after that, the guy wasn't into kissing me anymore. The girl who wrote these inspired lines is 14 years old. They appeared in the February 2004 edition of YM. Other submissions included one from a 14-year-old girl from California who got caught making out in the school gym with her boyfriend, his hand up her shirt, and one from a 14-year-old girl from Virginia who got caught kissing her boyfriend during an in-class science video. Most of the teen magazines nowadays revolve around sexual activity. They're telling girls who read these things that everybody else out there is doing it. You could even argue that they're training manuals for sex, says Anna Garner, Associate Dean for Graduate Studies and Research in the College of Communications at Marquette University. Training manuals for sex about pegs it. According to YM editors, they receive a constant barrage of letters from young girls asking about sex. We're always receiving depressing letters from 14-year-old girls who think withdrawal is an acceptable method of birth control. So YM offers information about the latest birth control drugs. 58% of you think the pill should be available over the counter, while 17% think a patient should see a doctor to get it, and directs kids to the Planned Parenthood website for more information. Likewise, the November 2001 issue of 17 promised on the cover to answer the question, does sex hurt the first time? The February 2004 YM cover offered its readers kissing do's and don'ts. YM's July 2004 offered its readers advice on how to have the perfect summer fling. February 2005's Cosmo Girl cover tempted buyers with an oath to reveal 5 flirting secrets that'll make him want you bad. Cosmo Girl's Ask College Girl column tells readers that no question's too heavy or too naughty for College Girl. 17's February 2005 issue answers questions from a 17-year-old Ohioan who noticed some small white bumps around the tip of my boyfriend's penis, and a 17-year-old Californian who had anal sex without a condom with her boyfriend in the back of his car. But the most interesting question came from one 15-year-old girl from Syracuse, Utah. Me and my boyfriend had sex about 3 weeks ago, and he wasn't wearing a condom. He didn't come inside me, but I'm still worried. I'm having really bad mood swings, my breasts feel tender, and my stomach is, like, hard, and I can't suck it in. Do you think I'm pregnant? If you're pregnant, you need care and advice, the advice columnist responds, and if you're not, you need to get birth control, so you'll avoid another situation like this. Or she could stop acting like a 15-year-old tramp. But that doesn't seem like a viable option if she's writing to 17 for advice. Cosmo Girl's February 2005 issue teaches its readers about vulva love. This Valentine's Day, get to know the body part that makes you so fab. If you're thinking about having sex, the magazine advises, visit a gyno first to talk about STD prevention and birth control. If you're worried about your parents finding out, call first and ask if she can keep your visit confidential. Cutting the parents out of the loop is certainly a good strategy if you attempt to replace their authority with teen magazines. The column contains a large graphic drawing of the genital area, complete with handy tips. The clitoris has 8,000 nerve endings. That's more than there are in the entire head of the penis. For further research, Cosmo Girl suggests visiting VDay.com campaigns and urges high school girls to put on their own productions of the vagina monologues. There's also a section about girls who name their vaginas. The purpose of naming genitalia remains unknown. If you lose them, will they return if you call them by name? Still, there are plenty of Cosmo Girl readers willing to contribute. Ms. Thang, because I'm a strong-minded, young, African-American woman, writes Sharmika, 16, Atlanta, Georgia. Mrs. Sprinkles, it's sort of like my code word. I'll say stuff to my friends like, yesterday me and Mrs. Sprinkles met the hottest guy. It cracks us up. Expounds Rachel, 15, of Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. My cookie jar. Explains Jessica, 17, of Cherokee, Alabama. When I was a little girl, my mom used to say, don't let any boys get into your cookie jar and take your cookies. And now she calls my boyfriend of 3 years the cookie monster. Boyfriend of 3 years. In other words, he's been going after the cookies since Jessica was 14. How adorable. Why is it that guys brag about their penises, but girls are so secretive about, even ashamed of, their genitals? The article asks. This is a perfect example of the equality sought by the women's movement. It asks the right question. Why do men act like animals with regard to their genitals? Yet still gives the wrong answer. It's time for women to celebrate our vulvas like animals. The obsession with sex is cloaked in obsession with boys. These magazines objectify boys for liberated young girls. Elle Girl prints Total Boy the Rating Game, wherein four dashing and daring L.A. guys step out in front of a jury of L.A. Elle Girls, two of whom would like to see Alvaro lose those pants. YM has a last boy standing contest, in which readers vote on which guy is the most major hottie. Cosmo Girl contains a boyometer, asking teenage girls to rate male models on a scale of 1 fire, warm, to 3, on fire. As if that weren't enough, Cosmo Girl also has an eye candy section, complete with boy band lookalikes in fold-out shirtless poses. It's Playgirl Light. Who needs a box of chocolates when you can have a cupcake like Joshua for Valentine's Day? The magazine asks breathlessly. At the same time they objectify boys, the teen magazines urge little girls to sex themselves up to attract boys. Elle Girl's February 7, 2005 cover touts sexy jeans for every body type, as well as seven ways to tell if he really likes you. This kind of juxtaposition, look better, next to is he into you, directs girls towards sex. This juxtaposition of looks to boys is ubiquitous throughout the teen mag genre. A quick survey of the teen magazines on the local newsstand shelf in mid-January 2005 reveals the pattern. February 2005's YM advertises the hottest guys on the planet, above 40 kick-ass party looks. The 17 cover promises sweet and sexy looks inside, just above the love survey. 5,000-plus hot guys reveal their deepest secrets. The teen Vogue offers flirty Valentine's Day looks your date will fall for. Teen People advertises the best jeans for your body, right above get a date by Friday. Teen proclaims new year, new you, then below all about dating, advice that really works. The most extreme example, of course, is Cosmo Girl, which carries each of these teasers on its February 2005 cover. 360 ways to be irresistible. Plus, 5 flirting secrets that'll make him want you bad. Get sexier abs now, the 10-minute-a-day workout. Is this the women's empowerment young girls were promised by the feminist movement? While women's magazines like Cosmopolitan explicitly discuss sexual positions, most teen magazines stick to dating and how to exploit the rents into letting you date. Teen explains the dating game by first telling teens how to sucker the adults. Parents say, not until you're 18. How do you get them to lighten up, read up, exclaims the magazine. Tips include group dating to alleviate parental fears about one-on-one contact, pushing the parents into allowing you to go to a movie with a guy, and getting around the parental strictures by running into your cutie at school or other functions. Think of these as sorta dates. Teen gives other pearls of wisdom as well. Oh yeah, don't pump him for compliments either. Of course he thinks you're hot. He asked you out, didn't he? They also push the kissing game. It's the end of the night, the scary moment of truth. Should you lean in and kiss him? Will he smooch you? Here's a better question. Should parents be paying for magazines that actively seek to undermine their authority and sell their teenage daughters on sexual activity? Star worship. The sex advice, the kissing tips, the boy fixation, all of it reappears through the vehicle of celebrity. There is probably no worse group of role models on earth than performance artists who exploit their sexuality for monetary gain. Would you trust Paris Hilton to babysit your kid? The teen magazines do. They spend a vast number of pages teaching Paris's life lessons to American girls. They also tout Lindsay Lohan, comes clean about her breasts, the breakup, and more, the Olsen twins, young, famous, and stressed out, Hilary Duff, win her beauty booty, Usher, confessions about sex, his soulmate, and that awesome six-pack, Chad Michael Murray, Chad's kissing partners tell all, Ashley Simpson, exclusive pics of Ashley's home, and the rest of the pathetic, talentless pop culture gang. The members of the PCG are all too willing to offer their important advice to young girls, plus cheesecake shots of themselves, and gossip. And, of course, plugs for their products. First, the advice. YM's February 2004 Feel the Love issue announced Kissing Do's and Don'ts on its cover. The actual article contains a series of celebrity kissing do's and don'ts. Among the useful tidbits of kissing knowledge were these pearls. Don't use your tongue as a weapon, Adam Levine, Maroon 5. Do keep your mouth minty fresh, Jessica Simpson. Don't invite your parents along, Gregory Smith, Everwood. It's a wonder that this monumental group of minds hasn't cured cancer by now. J14 carried a similar piece in its February 2005 issue, Stars Kiss and Tell. Jesse McCartney, of Summerland fame, or anonymity, as the case may be, told readers that he is a big hugger. I like to wrap my arms around a girl just like a monkey. All other resemblance is purely coincidental. Orlando Bloom, Pirates of the Caribbean, Lord of the Rings, informed readers that kissing is definitely a nervous sort of thing, because you're wondering whether to tongue or not to tongue. It depends on the person you're kissing. It should be a romantic, wet kiss, nothing too intense. Defying all logic, Bloom truly is more vacuous off-screen than he is on it. Fergie from Black Eyed Peas related a personal story. I was 11, and I had a huge crush on a guy. Usually, people talk about their first kiss being very awkward. Mine was not. We made out. At age 11. Yes, Virginia, past behavior is a good predictor for future actions. Then there are the cheesecake shots. Rating random boys through hot meters gets old fast, so teen magazines manufacture teen idols out of male celebrities. The February 2005 YM dedicated 11 pages of its mag to hot photos of male celebrities. We all know looks aren't everything, except when it comes to this list. YM pants. Hey, every once in a while it's fun to be shallow. Check these guys out. Can you blame us? YM labels R&B singer Usher the hottest guy of the year and carries a picture of a bathing suit clad Usher sitting by the pool. In his interview with YM, Usher talks extensively about his sex life. The more you live, the more you learn, the more you have to say, he says. But then tells teen girls that virginity is something to be valued. You're not less hip if you're not having sex.
Don't be pressured into it, because you never want to do something that you'll live to regret.
Perhaps that message would sound more sincere in a less sexualized context. As it stands, it sounds a lot like an anti-drunk driving commercial starring Teddy Kennedy filmed at the local pub. Teen's February 2005 edition promises hot celebs inside. Full-page pinups of Summerland sweetie Jesse McCartney, Adam Brody, the OC, Clubhouse cutie Jeremy Sumpter, Jake Parker, quintuples, One Tree Hill hottie Chad Michael Murray, Romeo, and Life as We Know It flirt Sean Ferris ensue. GL, February 2005 gets hot for Jesse McCartney. Headline, Jesse, oh yesy. We know we're always telling you to never sit by the phone and wait for it to ring, the editors drool. But when juicy Jesse McCartney's dialing you up, you stare at the phone and you wait, and you wait, and you wait. It would be laughable if it weren't so pathetic. Teen Vogue gets into the act, too. The women of Wisteria Lane might be drooling over the local gardener, but they're not alone. The editors slobber about Desperate Housewives star Jesse Metcalf. Teen People, February 2005, offers two locker posters of woman-hater Eminem. What a great way to promote female empowerment. But L Girl is the most obvious about its objectification of celebrities. Hot guys. We rate 'em, date 'em, and investigate 'em, the magazine brags. The February 2005 issue states, let's all objectify Brett Bender, a 17-year-old snowcross racer. Editor Elizabeth Wallace asks her readers to help her in her search for a guy who is total eye candy. Everyone is free to email her at elizabeth@lgirl.com. And don't forget the gossip. In reality, most celebrities are dumb as dirt, but the teen magazines encourage a sick fixation with their empty lives. They critique the clothes, agonize over the breakups, and portray them as deep personalities, suffering artists, Shakespearean tortured souls. We're supposed to cry over them, sigh over them, and buy over them. Teen People groans with anguished sympathy for the Olsen twins. The Olsens aren't alone in their agony. More and more, young stars are raising their voices about the painful price tag attached to fame. Woe to these poor celebrities. If you prick them, do they not bleed? Cosmo Girl gives Lindsay Lohan an outlet for her heartbreak. I'm heartbroken, Lohan says. Every breakup is painful, whether it's a boyfriend or your parents' marriage. Cosmo Girl sympathizes. Lindsay may be the girl everyone gossips about lately, but despite the reports that her life is all about hard partying, she has also faced hard times recently. It's been a year that has taught the 18-year-old a lot about herself. Ah, the slings and arrows of outrageous fortune. The magazine also makes sure to label Lohan strong and wise, as well as down to earth. Yes, wearing skimpy clothing and showing off fake cleavage does take courage and wisdom. J14 examines how rumors rocked Jessica's world. The Jessica of the title is, of course, Jessica Simpson. Not long after achieving the success she'd always dreamed of, Jess became the target of nasty rumors, the mag opines. It's hard for your family and friends to hear that stuff, Simpson says. Oh, that such scandalmongers could turn their eyes toward the napes of their necks and make but an interior survey of their good selves. 17 offers Jamie Lynn Spears, Britney's wannabe younger sister, an outlet for her inner turmoil. To tell you the truth, the only reason I don't want to be too famous is because of the paparazzi, Spears states. Somebody has got to stop them. It not only hurts my sister, but it's dangerous for them, too. It's getting bad, you know. They run you off the road. Why would they want to take that kind of risk? 17 murmurs sympathetically. Clearly, Jamie Lynn already knows that that kind of innocent comment can easily wind up as a tabloid cover line. Fie upon the damned paparazzi. Hell is empty and all the devils are here. Of course, teen magazine sympathy only goes so far. Just because celebrities suffer the indignities of daily intrusion upon their privacy doesn't mean that the teen magazines should stop intruding. Teen People make sure photographers are present when Britney Spears and Paris Hilton reveal their thongs. Teen Vogue grabs snapshots of Kate Bosworth and Kirsten Dunst making their daily rounds. It seems that despite their protestations about the evils of mass media, the teen magazine genre doth protest too much. Instilling social values. In supplanting parents, teen magazines encourage young girls to buy liberal social values wholesale. The first step is watering down religion. 17 does that by juxtaposing religious Christian values with secular and pagan ones, granting them all equal legitimacy. 17 asks, does your faith affect your love life? And then quotes a non-religious Jew, a non-religious Muslim, two pagans, and an atheist, alongside four religious Christians. Of course, this being a teen magazine, all views are of equal validity, so you get quotes like this. I am a polytheist. It's hard to find a guy who shares my beliefs. Kelly, 17, Wilton, California. Alongside quotes like this. Because I am Catholic, I believe in abstinence. Stephanie, 15, San Antonio, Texas. You get quotes like this. I'm Wiccan, and all the guys I've dated have been sort of weirded out when they first see my spellbooks or hear me talking about tarot. Rachel, 17, New York, New York. Alongside quotes like this. As a follower of Jesus Christ, I am waiting until I am ready to get married before even thinking about courtship. Kelly, 16, Huntington Beach, California. It's the most basic recipe for moral relativism in existence. Everyone's views are equal and valid, no matter how ludicrous. That recipe is strengthened in the following pages, as 17 presents the touching story of a girl who left her oppressive evangelical Christian upbringing for the gothic paganism of Wicca. My religion isn't evil, the article is titled. The subtitle reads, Jessica, 18, has found her faith, but lost her family in the process. What follows is a snarling rampage against Christianity. My parents signed me up for Bible study so I could get to know our faith better, Jessica tells 17. But what I ended up learning in that class was how intolerant our church was. It railed against homosexuals and taught us that people of different religions were damned. This wasn't the Christianity I'd practiced before. How could my parents really want to be a part of this? Jessica goes on to describe how she wore a pentacle home, how her mother yelled at her and called the symbol evil, and how Jessica found such solace in Wicca that I couldn't give it up for my parents. And I hoped they'd eventually accept it. I mean, it was a part of me. But I was wrong. 17 directs curious readers to witchvox.com to learn more about Wicca. If you care to visit witchvox.com to learn about your inner warlock, as I did, you'll find that the basic tenet of Wicca is, and it harm none, do as ye will. Despite the appearance, this is in no way a license to do whatever feels good to the individual without accompanying responsibility. Nothing could be further from the truth. The witch's read is rich with compassion, empathy, and respect for others, the individual practitioner, the goddess and god, and Mother Earth. It guides and directs our energies for the good of all. Well, that's a comfort. The other basic guideline of witches is the law of three, or the law of karmic return. Witches accept responsibility for their own actions, and are therefore very careful about how they use their magic. At this point, I decided not to become Wiccan. After all, how I use my magic is none of their business. Once you've obliterated any idea of godly morality, it's a short step to amorality. While 17 tells girls, it's much easier to stick to your values if you and your guy talk about sex before things get hot. They aren't exactly conservative in their sexual mores. It is best for you to talk to your parents or doctor about your sexual health. But if you can't do that, it's legal for you to visit a public clinic or a Planned Parenthood clinic confidentially. Call 800-230-PLAN or go to PlannedParenthood.org to find a clinic near you. Cosmo Girl advises girls to set boundaries for their bodies. Unfortunately, those suggested boundaries are restricted to kissing or staying above the belt. Cosmo Girl has some advice for social activism, too. Few of their suggestions would make my list of desirable causes. Their first suggestion is promoting peace. They suggest visiting websites like worldpeace.org/youth, threadproject.com, and warchild.org. worldpeace.org/youth explains how kids can plant peace poles in their communities. Whatever the location, the presence of a peace pole announces that this is a special place, dedicated to peace on Earth, the website claims. Perhaps we should plant peace poles in Saudi Arabia, Somalia, Syria, Iran, and North Korea. Hey, for a few bucks, we can end all war. If the peace polls don't work, we can always follow up on another of Cosmo Girl's suggestions and help create a huge, one-world, one-cloth tapestry to promote world peace. Tapestries. Now why didn't the Defense Department think of that one? Cosmo Girl also suggests saving the environment. They suggest visiting globalstewards.org. Click on Take Action. Among the actions suggested by globalstewards.org, fighting against genetically engineered food, animal experimentation. Clicking that link will get you to the psychotic People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals website, and overpopulation. Naturally, Cosmo Girl wants its activist readers to aid promoting gay-lesbian tolerance. They list as a success story the Massachusetts Supreme Court decision forcing homosexual marriage onto the populace. The ruling was historic, the magazine yelps, the first in America to give gays and lesbians the opportunity to legally wed. How nice. How about force-feeding the youngsters the right to incest or sex at any age as well? I hear the North American Man-Boy Love Association is interested in that one. Cosmo Girl asks readers to focus on ending racism. Sounds good, right? Too bad that Cosmo Girl considers ending affirmative action to be racist. They push freechild.org, a website advocating engaging children and youth as agents of radical democratic social change. Radical social change includes fighting for more sex education and gay, bisexual, transsexual, transgendered, queer, and questioning youth rights, among others. Freechild.org asks readers to engage in hip-hop activism. Some people refer to hip-hop as a tool for social change. Others see it as a degrading force that alienates communities. Young people are using hip-hop culture to reach and teach their communities about social justice and taking action. Perhaps I'll try some hip-hop activism right after I stop laughing, G-Dog. For the kiddies. Avoiding the horrible advice of the teen mags can be harder than you think. Just turn to the kids section of your newspaper. If it's like most newspapers, it has advice columns from either Dear Abby or Ann Landers, or both. For years, the columns have dispensed unmitigated sexual liberalism in the inches just next to the kid-friendly comics. As Robert Knight of Concerned Women for America writes, one of the most consistent themes in Dear Abby has been the promotion of the sexual revolution in its many guises. The column consistently parrots the propaganda of Planned Parenthood, the Kinsey Institute, and the Sexual Information and Education Council of the United States, SIECUS, using loaded terms such as sexual beings, as in, we are all sexual beings, and bad data. Both Abby and her sister Ann Landers have relied over the years on such authorities as Dr. Judd Marmor, former president of the American Psychiatric Association, who has consistently promoted the homosexual agenda within the psychiatric profession. In column after column, Abby mocks people who resist the cultural sexual zeitgeist. Even aside from their liberalism, these advice columns are simply silly. It's as though the columnists only have three options they can dispense. One, go to counseling. Two, visit parents, families, and friends of lesbians and gays, or some other such liberal interest group. 3. Discuss the issues with your fill-in-the-blank and see if you can come to a perspective of tolerance for their deviant behavior. Here's Dear Abby doing a type 2. Dear Abby, I noticed that my 16-year-old daughter wasn't her usual self, so I questioned her one night and asked if there was anything bothering her or if she was worried about something. She started crying and told me she is gay. I responded by crying with her and asking her if she was sure. She said she was. I told her she is still my daughter and I love her very much, but that I can't help hoping she's just confused and that as time goes on, she might see that this is not who she really is. I'm trying my best to accept it, but it is difficult at times. confused parent in Texas. A proper response could have pointed out that this was a 16-year-old girl, that young people are often confused about sexuality, and that seeing someone for help might be a decent option. Instead, Abby offered this brilliantly original response. Dear Confused, your feelings are normal. Most parents have plans and dreams for their children, and your child has turned out differently than you expected. Your next step is to contact PFLAG. I have mentioned this organization, Parents, Families, and Friends of Lesbians and Gays, many times in my column. It offers support groups, educational outreach, and more to families and friends of gay, lesbian, intersexual, and transgendered family members. The website is www.pflag.org, and the telephone number is 1-202-467-8180. Please don't wait to contact them. Here's a type 3, complete with endorsement of pornography. Dear Abby, my daughter, Rhonda, hosts several soft porn websites, and it upsets me greatly. She's 24, and a very bright, sweet, and loving person, which is why it's so difficult for me to understand why she does this. Rhonda earned more than $100,000 last year and has a sizable savings account, but her small business is pornography. We don't discuss her occupation, and no one but myself and my ex-husband know she's involved in this kind of thing. As far as everyone else is concerned, she designs websites. Rhonda wants me to be proud of her accomplishments, but I'm not. I love my daughter very much and keep hoping she'll grow out of this. However, I'm not sure she will. I hate lying to everyone about what she does, but I would never want anyone to know. How do I come to terms with this? Or can I? Her loving mother. A proper response might have been, "Where were you when your daughter was growing up? How about telling her you never want to hear about her business again, and make clear your disapproval?" Instead, Abby suggested that mother be tolerant. You and your daughter have very different moral values. While it's against your principles, what she's doing is legal. She's built a successful business and wants you to respect what she has accomplished. That said, I doubt you will ever see eye to eye on this issue. Love her as your daughter, try to accept that this is a choice she has made, and focus on her positive qualities. She's bright, sweet, and loving, not to mention a whiz at business. At this point, I doubt you can change her. Meanwhile, Ann Landers self-righteously condemned anyone who opposed masturbation and suggested abstinence. Well, now I am going to suggest a far more realistic solution than abstinence. The sex drive is the strongest human drive after hunger. It is nature's way of perpetuating the human race. Males reach their sexual peak as early as 17. There must be an outlet.
I am recommending self-gratification or mutual masturbation,
whatever it takes to release the sexual energy. This is a sane and safe alternative to intercourse, not only for teenagers, but also for older men and women without partners. I do not want to hear from clergymen telling me it's a sin. The sin is making people feel guilty about responding to this basic, fundamental human drive. Parents take comfort. If Ann Landers says it isn't a sin, it isn't a sin. When it's Ann Landers versus God, clearly Ann takes precedence. For mature women only. Ultimately, all these advice columns and teen magazines serve as gateway products for the hard stuff. Publishers have learned that you've got to prep the kiddies with YM, L Girl, Teen Vogue, 17, GL, and Cosmo Girl before you slip them Cosmopolitan. And Cosmo and its ilk are truly pornography. They belong behind those black pieces of plastic at the newsstands. Cosmo has a circulation of about 3 million, making it number 21 on the magazine hit parade. To make the teen tie-in clear, they often feature a teen celebrity on the cover. As of February 2005, that teen celebrity was no talent hack, Ashley Simpson, in a slinky red dress named Cosmo's Fun, Fearless Female of the Year. Unlike Sister Jessica, Ashley refuses to swear off sex until marriage. Instead, She says that having sex before you're married is something that you should decide on your own. That's a terrific message for the teenagers who make up a sizable portion of the magazine's readership. Letters from readers are often from the barely legal crowd.
I was babysitting, and while the kids were napping, I decided to sit on their deck and write a note to my boyfriend Brian.
I made it really racy and described in detail how I wanted to go down on him the next time we could sneak into his shower together, writes Katie, age 18. Each issue revolves entirely around sex. Articles in the magazine include Beyond Kama Sutra, Advanced Sex Positions, Number 3 Will Have You Grinning for a Week, The Power of Pre-Sex, 5 Tricks That Will Totally Rev His Engine, Guess What He's Really Thinking in Bed, His Butt, What Your Guy's Bum Shape Reveals About His Personality, Squeeze, Then Read, 50 Ways to Have Fun with Your Man, and Hilarious Confessions of Real Desperate Housewives. Cosmo's sex positions include the Cosmo Cat, the Pelvic Push, the Lusty Lap Dance, the Sultry Spoon, the Sleeping Dog, the Booty Lift, the Frisky Face-Off, the Tantalizing Tilt, the Flying Squirrel, the Cootie Hop, and the Pit and the Pendulum. Well, actually, I just made the last three up. But since I did, can I work for Cosmo now? The recommended tricks that will totally rev his engine are letting him see you naked. When you finally get down to removing your panties, do it painfully slow so he feels the burn. Using your breath, work your way south to his package, pucker up and blast a circle of cool air around his penis, as if you were putting out the candles on a cake. Playing a little rough, make him putty in your hands by physically moving him into different positions. Scratching your nails down his back and being ballsy when he tries to take over. Tantalizing with touch. Instead of heading straight for his package, mix up your sexual touches. And bringing him to the brink. And now for the frisky finale, pull out the start-stop trick. Alongside the above text, Cosmo prints photos of polar bears in heat. I'll let this one pass without comment. Sometimes Cosmo speaks for itself. Cosmo helps with your shopping needs as well, with its Guide to Condoms. Once you read our manual of racy roll-on maneuvers and saucy love glove styles, no man will eschew safe sex with you again, avers the inaptly named Peter Hyman. For some hilarious hijinks, Cosmo gives its Cosmo Commandments, 10 ways you should never ever test his love. Commandment number 4. Declare that you're taking a stand against body hair removal of all kinds. Commandment number 7. Nickname his member the little engine that could. Commandment number 9. Have dinner with your ex. Come home with a hickey on your inner thigh. That's thigh-lickingly funny. Cosmo continues the teen trend of objectifying men. Josh Duhamel is Cosmo's fun, fearless male of the year. Other FFMs include David Spade, Kevin Bacon, Simon Cowell, Carson Kressley, Bill Hemmer, Ben McKenzie, and Tay Diggs. There's also the Guy Without His Shirt rating contest. In the article, But Really, Cosmo analyzes male personalities based on the shape of their rears. Complete with half-naked pictures of male models, the magazine focuses in on the gluteus maximus, which is a sign to behold. In What His Mouth Moves Reveal, Cosmo analyzes male personalities based on the way they snog. It also translates the male mind. He says, I love you, after sex. He means, that thing you just did with your pelvis rocked my world. Here's a handy hint to women. Ask a guy how he feels instead of looking at Cosmo. We're not that hard to figure out. And there's the requisite celeb gossip. Cosmo hired psychotherapist Sherry Bird, author of Kissing School, 7 Lessons on Love, Lips, and Life Force, to analyze pics of celebrity kisses. Kate Bosworth and Orlando Bloom's smooch is full of heat and love, and they are both equally engaged, Bird says. Also, the way Kate touches Orlando's face with her fingertips is intimate. Whoever said that psychotherapists were fraudulent shrinks? Celeb gossip is a big moneymaker for other magazines as well. People magazine has 3.6 million readers, making it the 13th largest magazine in the country. Their Teen People lead-in for teen girls was number 48. Does marijuana lead to crack? Perhaps. Do teen magazines lead to Cosmo and People? No doubt about it. The pitch. Don't let magazines, or anybody, try to define love for you, writes 17 editor Atusa Rubinstein. Yeah, right.
If the teen magazines weren't trying to define love, beauty, and virtue to each and every teenage girl, who would buy their dreck? Girl's Life faced that very problem.
For the first 8 years, GL barely ran any articles on crushing, dating, kissing, or anything else that smacked of guydom, admits editor Karen Bockram. The magazine, designed for 10 to 15-year-olds, was dedicated to features on dealing with friends and family, building self-esteem, and learning more about themselves. As of 2004, they still hadn't cracked the top 100 magazines in the country, according to the New York Times Almanac. As of 2001, their circulation remained around 400,000. In order to reach the saturated girls' market, they sold out. While remaining much milder than most of the teen magazines, they turned to boys and crushes. In August 2001, the magazine was made over. After getting letter after letter from girls asking for help and advice, we felt we needed to step up. After all, we were always saying that girls should go after their dreams. Suddenly, it seemed super judgmental to totally blow off all girls whose dream was to have a boyfriend, Bockram explains. It's a weak explanation at best. If girls wanted boy advice, there were only 100 other magazines from which they could choose. Finances were a motivating factor here. 17 makes over $110 million in advertising revenues each year. YM makes over $100 million. Cosmo makes over $280 million. People is the number one advertising revenue magazine in the country, raking it in to the tune of more than $780 million per year. Why should GL get left out in the cold? Once again, it's a vicious cycle. The magazines push the market ever deeper into sexuality. The market demands more. The good magazines get marginalized. Members of the porn generation keep on buying, reading, and imbibing the sweet poison of oversexed culture. Before you know it, it's the responsible folks at the teen mags that determine when, how, and why a teenager has sex. Chapter 7. Abercrappie and Bitch. When sex is a commodity, there is always a better deal. Gene Kilbourn, author, Can't Buy My Love. When Janet Jackson bared her right breast at the Super Bowl halftime show in 2004, social conservatives were justifiably enraged. But why did it take an exposed breast to cause FCC Chairman Michael Powell to crack down on television sexuality and vulgarity? After all, the very same Super Bowl carried some of the most raunchy commercials in recent memory. Budweiser ran 9 commercials during the Super Bowl. In one, Fergus Bud Light, 2 dog owners meet. The first tells his dog to fetch. The dog brings back a Bud Light. He turns snootily to the second dog owner and asks what his dog can do. Fergus Bud Light. The second dog owner commands. The dog immediately chomps on the first dog owner's genitals, and he tosses the beer directly to the second dog owner. It makes you wonder whether the focus group for this ad was a group of ADD-ridden third graders. In another Budweiser commercial, Cedric the Entertainer visits a massage parlor. "I'm here for my massage," he tells the attractive girl behind the counter. "These big muscles need some tenderizing." "Okay, cutie, room 5. She responds with a seductive smile. Cedric accidentally ends up in room 4, the bikini wax room. A good-looking young black woman enters. "You're here for the body treatment?" she asks incredulously. "Oh, yeah," he answers. My body, your treatment. Mm-hmm. She obliges with a bikini wax. The commercial ends with Cedric sitting beside a fellow bikini wax customer, asking, "Is there a breeze in here?" Apparently, the third-grade beer drinkers thought highly of this idea, but the title for grossest Super Bowl commercial had to go to Budweiser's horny talking monkey ad. A beautiful young woman sits on a couch, her boyfriend standing behind the couch. On the couch beside her is a monkey. "I love your apartment, Brian," she says to her boyfriend, "and Frank is so well behaved." "Yeah, we're best buddies. I'm gonna go grab some Bud Lights," Brian responds. He exits the room, leaving the monkey alone with the girl. She turns to the monkey and coos, "You're so cute." The monkey puts his arm around the girl and begins talking. "I think, you're cute too," he says. "You can talk?" she asks. "Baby, I can do a little bit more than just talk," the monkey states. "But let's cut the chit-chat. Head upstairs, or, you know." The monkey then simulates sexual motion while grunting and screeching. After Brian enters the room and then leaves again, the monkey turns to the girl and asks, "So how do you feel about back hair?" This commercial certainly wasn't approved by third graders. It must have been approved by college students. Other sexually oriented commercials included a Visa commercial about U.S. Olympic women volleyballers playing in the snow, a Gillette commercial for men's razors containing no fewer than 14 shots of beautiful women in a one-minute commercial, many depicting actual sexual activity, a trailer for Starsky and Hutch, including various scantily clad women, and another Budweiser commercial joking about infidelity. Hilariously, the most subtle commercial about sex was an ad for Levitra, an erectile dysfunction drug. The ad depicted former Chicago Bears and New Orleans Saints head coach Mike Ditka, describing the differences between football, it's fast, it's action-packed, play after play, and baseball. It's not quite the same. Football, Ditka says, is Levitra. Baseball could use Levitra. For those who know nothing about what Levitra actually does, the references in the commercial mean nothing. Still, you wonder how erectile dysfunction commercials ever made it onto primetime television. Fashionable exhibitionism. Sex in advertising has been present for decades. In 1968, Look magazine publisher Thomas Shepard stated that sex in advertising was on its way out. Yet as of 1999, 70% of respondents to an Adweek poll felt that there was too much sex in advertising. The level of sexual explicitness has escalated over time. In its earliest incarnations in America, before World War I, sexuality in advertising was bound by the mores of the time. Temptation was marketed through long skirts or subtle language, not explicit nudity. In the 1920s, sex in advertising escalated. While showing the backs of women's knees remained taboo, marketing of silk hosiery helped create the flapper image. Sex in advertising gradually escalated into the 1930s, when nudes first appeared in American advertising. In the 1940s and 1950s, the treatment of sex in advertising shifted from an almost reverent dignity to casual humor. The 1960s sexual revolution opened the door the rest of the way. Between the mid-1960s and mid-1980s, use of sexily dressed men and women in magazine advertising increased significantly. Between the mid-1980s and mid-1990s, the percentage of magazine advertisements containing a man and a woman involved in sexually suggestive behavior shot from about 20% to over 50%. According to Barry Gunter of the University of Sheffield, one 1998 study showed that 12% of advertisements from a sample of over 500 commercials recorded from 1 week of network television contained less than fully dressed models. 1% of the advertisements contained verbal references to sex, 7% contained physical references, and 8% contained physical contact of a sexual nature. That may not sound like a lot, but when you realize that the average child watches 40,000 commercials per year, it's a ton. Sexual advertising is overwhelmingly targeted at the youth market, and has been for more than two decades. In 1981, for example, movie star Brooke Shields, who was all of 15 at the time, starred in Calvin Klein's jeans campaign, in which she purred, "Know what comes between me and my Calvins? Nothing." Three network-owned stations in New York refused to run the ads, but sales of the jeans skyrocketed 300% after the first commercials hit. Advertising has only gotten worse since the arrival of the porn generation, with the rise of brand marketing like the repulsive Abercrombie & Fitch, A&F. When they're not marketing thong underwear with the words wink wink or eye candy printed on them to 7 to 14-year-old girls, they're putting out pornography catalogs designed to pique the interests of teenagers. Company spokesperson Hampton Carney called the underwear cute and fun and sweet, by the way. Illinois Lieutenant Governor Corinne Wood called for a boycott of A&F to protest its November 1998 catalog, the cover of which portrayed four girls and a boy in bed together, with the girls triumphantly holding aloft the boys' boxers. In 1999, A&F put out its Christmas catalog, entitled Naughty or Nice. In the catalog, porn star Jenna Jameson was featured lying on a bed with her rear absolutely visible. She also conducts an explicit interview with the catalog. The catalog printed a mock interview with a Santa Claus portrayed as a child molester, for good measure. When they're not marketing to the teeny boppers, A&F markets to the 18 to 22 crowd. "Our customer is actually the 18 to 22-year-old college student," says Carney. "We are trying to keep it as cool, editorial, edgy, and sexy as possible." The 2001 A&F Spring Quarterly contained an article entitled XXX Adventure, Get Wet, Set, and Go on Spring Break. The article suggested that a Catholic high school senior in love with a nun persuade her to break her vows. The issue includes an interview with a male porn star of over 1,700 films who gives career advice. Illinois State Senator Patrick O'Malley, a Republican, described the marketing strategy as relying heavily on shock value in its advertising, using not only photos but especially narrative that is obscene. And Bill Johnson, the president of the American Decency Association, observed that their marketing is based on the recognition that teens like edgy, line-crossing, taboo things. The 2001 A&F summer catalog featured naked bodies galore and required a valid photo ID for purchase. William F. Buckley Jr. commented, "There was never a pitch more naked than Abercrombie's. The non-display of its products, in deference to sheer biological exhibitionism." The 2003 A&F Christmas catalog was pulled from shelves because of the outcry it provoked, although Carney protested that A&F pulled the catalog because "we just launched a new perfume called Now, and we had to make space on the counter for the product." This issue of the catalog included the usual nudity, as well as advice from a sexpert, urging kids to get as much sexual experience as possible, including sex for three. After Dr. James Dobson went on the offensive regarding the advertising pornography, A&F removed the catalog from its stores. Carney wants to make sure, however, that no one gets the wrong idea about A&F. "Our spring quarterly will be back in stores mid-January, and everyone will see that there's no change in our editorial policy," he said. "We will still have butts and partial nudity." As Joseph Sabia of the Cornell Review points out, A&F also markets gay sexuality like it's going out of style. They employ noted gay photographer Bruce Weber and advertise in Out magazine. Kathy Crimmins, self-proclaimed fag hag and author of How the Homosexuals Saved Civilization, actually writes that fraternity guys wearing A&F are imitating a gay lifestyle by buying into Weber's ideas of male beauty. Sabia concludes that sex is all around us in advertising, but A&F's practices are particularly troubling with regard to its stealth campaign to sexualize young teenagers. To that end, A&F distributes an out-of-here checklist for college life. C is for condoms in ample supply. M is martini shaker. Q is for queen-sized bed. P is progressive politics. A and F dispenses advice on sex as well. On dorm room seduction. It's okay to start on the sofa, but don't stay there. Other insights include, invest in a good plush rug, the floor can be fun, and negotiate a special group rate at a local motel, which your entire quad can take advantage of. Just make sure you're not the second group to rent that room. Then there's clothing brand FC UK. FC UK stands for French Connection United Kingdom. But hey kids, if you switch the U and the C, then by golly you've got an naughty word. So use FC UK as a brand name, and wait for the dyslexics in the crowd to figure it the coarse new brand. What a gimmick. Thought up by advertising guru Trevor Beatty, the new FC UK brand name pushed French Connection's 1997 interim profits to an 81% increase. Those clever marketing execs also came up with slogans for use in Britain, like FC UK like a bunny and FC UK for England. In America, meanwhile, FC UK began advertising in Times Square with slogans like I You Want and Night All Long. See, the phrases are mixed up too, get it? Just like the letters in FC UK. Other FC UK ad campaigns have included ads for glasses, accompanied by a picture of two men and the word homosexuality. An ad depicting a beautiful woman walking toward the camera with the copy reading, Think My Clothes Off. An ad containing two pictures of women and the caption, Yes, Both. When New York City banned taxi tops from carrying ads like these, FC UK countered with an ad insulting the United States. The text reads simply, Brave, but not free. Linda Lee Potter, a columnist for the London Daily Mail, encouraged her readers to boycott French Connection because its advertising message was, If you want to get laid, wear our clothes. FC UK took retaliatory action by creating an ad campaign based specifically on that idea. Its new ads depict virile young men and women with the word guaranteed plastered across them. The FC UK campaign certainly garnered a good deal of attention for French Connection. That was, after all, the goal. Beatty himself said as much. I have two views on advertising. One is that it must always be simple, with a single-minded message. Secondly, it should get noticed, because otherwise you're wasting your money. 30 years ago, uttering the F-word in a classroom would get you suspended from school. Today, it's common to see American youths running around in sweatshirts marked FC UK. Why market this stuff to youth? Because the money's already there. Today's parents are so afraid that their child won't think of them as a friend that they've stopped exercising the power of the purse. One marketing researcher refers to such buys as guilt money. Parents say, Here's the credit card, why don't you go online and buy something because I can't spend time with you? In 2002 alone, teenagers spent over $100 billion and got their parents to spend $50 billion more. Alyssa Quart, author of Branded, The Buying and Selling of Teenagers, writes that those under 25 are now the fastest growing group filing for bankruptcy. She adds that marketing experts are now targeting 9 to 13-year-olds as well, prepping the kids to be the sort of teen consumers that companies wish for. Advertisers spend more than $12 billion per year on advertising aimed at the youth market. As Julianne Sivilka explains, today's youth-oriented ads touch on every area of sexual pleasure and perversion.
If today's young generation of readers are less shocked by open sexuality than their grandparents' coquettish suggestions, can culture be far from a time when any sexual inclination will be freely portrayed in advertising?
Porn sells meat. In early 2005, the fast food chain Hardee's, known in some regions as Carl's Jr., began a marketing campaign for their Monster Thick Burger, an enormous, greasy concoction, by running a series of ridiculously oversexed TV ads. In a spot titled Fist Girl, a blonde woman in a strapless dress and high heels sticks her entire fist in her mouth, then pulls it back out and smiles. In a companion spot, A different woman in a spaghetti strap top crams her mouth full of plastic straws. How do you know if you can eat the largest double burger in the country?